माधवा कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जनवल्लभा गिरिवरधारी। जय गोपी जनवल्लभा गिरिवरधारी। यशोधनन्दन ब्रज जनरञ्जन यशोधनन्दन ब्रज जनरञ्जन यमुनातीरवनचारी। यमुनातीरवनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयामुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रयेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया। भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। Hare Krishna, good morning. So nice to be back here with all of you. I think last time I spoke, we were just starting the insult battle of Hiranyaksha and Varaha. And now we're in the middle of the physical battle of Hiranyaksha and Varaha. They started fighting the chapter before, and I'm not sure if it was during one of the verses that you came for, but during their fight, it almost seemed like Varahadev was so, you know, quote unquote, losing to Hiranyaksha. And Brahma, he said, "Please, my lord, stop this toying around. I know you enjoy the fight a lot, but this is becoming really worrying." And so now in the beginning of this chapter, Varahadev, he hears Brahma, he says, "Okay, time to put it into fifth gear." So the series of verses which we're going to be hearing today. It's about 12 verses. We only have one that's call and response, the last one. But it's the description of their battle, and it's really cool. And I thought it's really, really cool because the Bhagavatam is not just tattva, it's not just philosophy, it's not just prayers. There's drama, there's romance, there's action, there's politics, there's so much in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is a prime example of action and an incredible fight scene. So as I read through these verses, try to create maybe a mental picture of what's happening. Try to envision what's this fight like, because it's very descriptive. So I'm going to start with text 2, and I'm just going to read on my own the translations up until text 14, and then we'll do that call and response. Okay. The Lord, who had appeared from the nostril of Lord Brahma, sprang and aimed his mace at the chin of his enemy, the Hiranyaksha demon, who was stalking fearlessly before him. Struck by the demon's mace, however, the Lord's mace slipped from his hand and looked splendid as it fell down whirling. This was miraculous, for the mace was blazing wonderful. Even though the demon had an excellent opportunity to strike his unarmed foe without obstruction, because now the mace has exited the hand of Lord Varaha, he respected the law of single combat, thereby kindling the fury of the Supreme Lord. So though you can see Varadev, he wants to fight, and his mace fell, and he wants Hiranyaksha to take that opportunity to hit him when he's down without a weapon, but he didn't, because even though he's a demon, these were ancient times where battle had rules and respect, and that actually made the Supreme Lord more transcendentally angry. As the Lord's mace fell to the ground and a cry of alarm arose from the witnessing crowd of gods and rishis, the personality of God had acknowledged the demon's love and righteousness and therefore invoked his Sudarshan discus. As the discus began to revolve in the Lord's hands and the Lord contended at close quarters with the chief of his Vaikuntha attendants, who had been born as Hiranyaksha, a vile son of Diti, there issued from every direction strange expressions uttered by those who were witnessing from airplanes. They had no knowledge of the Lord's reality, and they cried, "May victory attend you. Pray, dispatch him. Play no more with him." This is the demigods. They're seeing this, and they're feeling worried because here's Hiranyaksha, who's just destroying the whole universe, and it seems like even Krishna, even the Supreme Lord, is not a match for him. And they're saying, "Okay, just stop playing with him. Calm down our nerves and just finish this battle once and for all." And it reminded me a little bit of the pastime of Krishna and Kaliya, where Kaliya had Krishna in his coils, and Krishna was, you know, by everyone's vision, stuck in the coils of Kaliya. And the Brajavasis were just in so much anguish, and the Krishna, "Please, you know, stop this, finish him." So this is the same mood. When the demon saw the personality of Godhead, who had eyes just like lotus petals, standing in position before him, armed with his Sudarshan discus, his senses were overpowered by indignation. He began to hiss like a serpent, and he bit his lip in great resentment. The demon, who had fearful tusks, stared at the personality of Godhead as though to burn him. Springing into the air, he aimed his mace at the Lord, exclaiming at the same time, "You are slain! O saintly Vidura," while his enemy looked on, the Lord in his boar form, the enjoyer of all sacrificial offerings, playfully knocked down the mace with his left foot, even as it came upon him with the force of a tempest. The Lord then said, "Take up your weapon and try again, eager as you are to conquer me." Challenged in these words, the demon aimed his mace at the Lord and once more loudly roared. When the Lord saw the mace flying towards him, he stood firmly where he was and caught it with the same ease as Garuda, the king of birds, would seize a serpent. His valor thus frustrated, the great demon felt humiliated and was put out of countenance. He was reluctant to take back the mace when it was offered by the personality of Godhead. Tirvara is like, here, try again. Try again. He now took a trident. So now he's leveling up to a trident, which is as rapacious as a flaming fire, and hurled it against the Lord, the enjoyer of all sacrifices, even as one would use penance for a malevolent purpose against a holy Brahmana. If this is text 14, we'll do the Sanskrit for this now. Tado jasa daitya mahabhatarpitam. Tado jasa daitya mahabhatarpitam. Chakasad antaka udirna diditi. Chakasad antaka udhirna diditi. Chakrena chicheda nishata nemita. Chakrena chicheda nishata nemina. Harir yata tarksha patatram ujjitam. Harir yata tarksha patatram ujjitam. I'm going to have the adults chant first. Someone on the ladies' side. Ditya Mahabhatarpitam. Taka Udhirna Dhiriti. Uchicheda nishatani menina. Harir yata tarksha patatram ujjitam. The students, please chant. Tado jasa daitya mahabhatarpitam. Chakasavantaka udhirna diditi. Chakrena chacheda nishata nemina. Hadir yata tarksha patatram ujjitam. Tadojasa daitya mahabhatarpitam. Chakasadantaka udhirna diditi. Chakrena chacheda nishata nemina. Adhiryata tarksha patatram ujjitam. Tat, that trident, Ojasa, with all his strength, Daitya, among the demons, Mahabhata, by the mighty fighter, Arpitam, hurled. Chakasat. Shining. Antake. In the middle of the sky. Udhirna. Increased. Dhiditi. Illumination. Chakrena. By the Sudarshan disc. Chitcheda. He cut to pieces. Nishata. Sharpened. Nemina. Rim. Harir. Indra. Yata. As. Tarksha. Of Garuda. Patatram. The wing. Ujitam. Abandoned. Translation. Hurled by the mighty demon with all his strength, the flying trident shone brightly in the sky. The personality of Godhead, however, tore it to pieces with his discus Sudarshan, which had a sharp-edged rim, even as Indra cut off a wing of Garuda. Purport. The context of the reference given herein regarding Garuda and Indra is this. Once upon a time, Garuda, the carrier of the Lord, snatched away a nectar pot from the hands of demigods in heaven in order to liberate his mother, Vinita, from the clutches of his stepmother, Kadru, the mother of the serpents. On learning of this, Indra, the king of heaven, hurled his thunderbolt against Garuda. With a view to respect the infallibility of Indra's weapon, Garuda, though otherwise invincible, being the Lord's own mount, dropped one of his wings, which was shattered to pieces by the thunderbolt. The inhabitants of higher planets are so sensible that even in the process of fighting, they observe the preliminary rules and regulations of gentleness. In this case, Garuda wanted to show respect for Indra, since he knew that Indra's weapon must destroy something, he offered his wing. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pastitade Shudarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vancha kalpa trupyascha, kripa sindhu bhaivacha. Patita nam pavanevyo, vaishnavevyo, namo namah. So as you can see, even this verse has a backstory. And so many things in Srimad Bhagavatam have backstories. And this gives us so many clues about what's being said. Because you can see this whole fight scene as just an exciting fight scene. Or you can backtrack a little bit and try to see what's the story behind this fight scene and what lesson can I learn from it. And so today I wanted to speak on the topic of rasa, or the flavors and tastes of our relationship with Krishna. And the reason I'm choosing this topic is because if you remember, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were who in their previous life? Does anybody remember? They're two gatekeepers of Vaikuntha. Anybody remember these two gatekeepers? Somebody? Jaya and Vijay, thank you. Jaya and Vijay, the two gatekeepers. And they were cursed by the four who? Four Kumaras. The four Kumaras cursed Jaya and Vijaya. We've went over this in previous classes, and it's also explained that actually Jaya and Vijaya, you see, they're guardians of Vaikuntha, which is sort of like, it's interesting because Vaikuntha is a place where there's no anxiety and peacefulness, so how could, you know, you're here, there's guardians, but there's not really anyone to attack the Lord. And as guardians, they had this desire that it would be so nice to engage in the relationship, the rasa, of chivalry and fighting with the Lord, or serve in his desire to want to fight. because the Lord has this desire. But in Vaikuntha, he can't do that. Because who's gonna come and fight him in Vaikuntha? By its own nature, it's not a place of that. And that's why many times the Lord comes to the material world and he enjoys a good fight with the demons. So Jaya and Vijaya, they had this desire. And Krishna, the fulfiller of all desires, fulfilled this desire of his devotees in the form of Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu. So here we can see Hiranyaksha is fighting with Varahadeva, with the Supreme Lord. And actually, Hiranyaksha is a devotee who has a desire to have this surge, rasa, with the Supreme Lord, which is called Vira Rasa. Or when it comes to chivalry in terms of assisting the Lord in fighting or fighting for the Lord, it's called Yuddha Vira Rasa. And so this is a very specific desire and taste that's available with the Supreme Lord that they desired, and that Krishna is enjoying this in such a way. So actually, it's very deep, this fighting. It's not just a good fight, and there's a bad guy, and Krishna is the good guy, and he's beating up the bad guy. There's actually much more to it. And so on this basis, I want to zoom out and speak about rasa, because it's so essential, and it's so important to bhakti. I want to start by maybe zooming out before getting to the definition of what is rasa. What does this mean? I think most of us can agree in this world that material things don't bring lasting happiness, right? They may bring temporary happiness, but they don't bring lasting happiness. And this is something that not just in spiritual circles is it understood. This is understood in the material realm too. There's research that has proved this, that actually material objects, pleasure for the senses, it only brings happiness to a certain extent. And Krishna, he addresses this in Bhagavad Gita. He says, Param Dvishva Navartante, that the soul is restricted from sense enjoyment, from our body, but we have a natural taste for pleasure. This is natural to the soul. Anandamayo Vyasyat, that the soul is naturally pleasure-seeking. It wants to be naturally happy and jubilant. But in the material world, we're trying to find this through our senses. It doesn't always work. But even that desire for taste, that desire for some flavor, that's what's known as rasa, and it's available in the material world. And actually, it's what drives this material world. Everyone is trying to find some sort of taste or happiness. But rasa, in the spiritual sense, it's limitless and it's eternal. And so rasa, this taste, or Srila Prabhupada would define rasa as mellow. And mellow doesn't mean like chilled out and, you know, relaxed. This definition of mellow means a sort of flavor or taste that's available within a relationship. A mature, fixed, relishable flavor, not something fleeting. And it's the essence of a relationship. And so rasa is this force that makes the whole world go around, because everyone's trying to seek pleasure in some sort of way. But it's also the force that drives the spiritual world. It's also the force that drives spiritual life. So this bhakti rasa, or flavor in relation to loving service to Krishna, this guarantees lasting happiness. Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita that there's no loss or diminution in this process of Krishna consciousness. In this process of bhakti, there's no loss. But if we're trying to find taste in the material world, there often is loss. For example, if I was just in Europe this last month and doing different things, but the last week of it, my wife and I took a little vacation, and we were in Spain, and it was really nice. And there's so much nice things to eat. And we're like, okay, you know, we're going to go. No sugar in Kartik, so let's just like go all out. So delicious, but then what comes with that is you feel bloated, you get sick, you gain weight. So some kind of material enjoyment always has a side effect. It always has something that's comes with it and sort of counters the pleasure. So there's not really everlasting pleasure. But when it comes to bhakti, there is everlasting pleasure. And there's no loss, there's no side effect, so to say. You just keep accumulating. And this is really what the difference is of bhakti ras versus material taste. And so I don't want to make this a class about, you know, hear all the details about each of the five primary rasas, here are the secondary rasas, but just so you're aware, which you may already be, there are these five primary ways in which we can have certain flavors or tastes in our relationship with Krishna. There is shanta ras, which is, in summary, that there's an awe and reverence. Seeing Krishna is great, but there's not so much of a active relationship. It's a little bit of a passive relationship. So this is often called rasa in neutrality. There's dasya, which is the feeling of Krishna is my master, I'm his servant. There is sakya, or Krishna is my friend, or a peer, I share with him. There is vatsalya, or Krishna is my child, and there's a parental affection. And then there is madhurya, Krishna is my beloved, and I give him my heart in this way. And so when we speak about rasas, and we're introduced to the topic of rasa, and these tastes and flavors in our relationship to Krishna, the question isn't, which one do I fit in? Which one do I like? Which one do I want to choose? No, actually, rasa is revealed through mature practice of Krishna consciousness. It's revealed in mature stages of Krishna consciousness. And it's revealed to us by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. This is the only way. It's not an artificial placement of oneself into, I like this, I like this, I'm in this rasa, you're in this rasa. And so Srila Prabhupada encouraged that actually in understanding rasa tattva and understanding our relationship and our mellows and our moods and tastes and flavors in our relationship with Krishna, there's a process. And that process is understanding the foundational principles of rasa, the foundational principles of our relationship with Krishna. And by this understanding and practicing with this understanding, we practice devotional service more and more, and gradually it becomes more and more revealed. So I want to speak today about some of these foundational principles of rasa, of our relationship with Krishna, and the flavors that we can experience in our relationship with Krishna. And bhakti is personal. It's a relationship of the jiva and the Supreme Lord, and it's a loving relationship. And there's acts of loving service within this relationship. And to understand that, we have to understand a few core principles of this. And so one of the very important principles and truths that's given about our relationship to Krishna by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Jivera Sarupa Hoy Krishnera Nityadas. Has anyone heard this line before, this verse, very famous? And it says the constitutional nature or position of a living entity, of you, is that you're eternally a servant of Krishna. And this is like a fact within bhakti that everything else circles around. But the constitutional position, your eternal nature, your existence is actually that you're an eternal servant of Krishna. And service is the essence of love. There's no love without some act of service or service attitude. Real love is wanting to please the other person. And when you only want to please the other person without any desire to please yourself, that's known as selfless love or pure love. And service is natural. And this verse is saying it's natural, and the natural position is service to Krishna, eternal service to Krishna. But service is natural. I mean, service to your boss, to your company, to your teacher, to your parents, to your friends, to your husband, to your wife. Everything is actually some sort of service. It may not always be selfless in this world, but there's service. It's just natural. And the impetus for service, Srila Prabhupada explains, is pleasure. The impetus for service is pleasure. And as I said before, the impetus of the nature of a living entity is that they're pleasure-seeking. But as we discussed, if I, you know, go take a one-week vacation and eat a lot and then feel sick and fat afterwards, there's a side effect that comes with material pleasure. But there is a longevity, forever longevity, and an ever-increasing happiness that comes with spiritual pleasure. So this is the first important understanding of any rasa or any relationship or specific flavor we find in relationships with Krishna is that there has to be the understanding that I am an eternal servant of Krishna. It's known as Sambandha Gyan. It's the basis and foundation of spiritual life. The second point, which is really the main thing I want to speak about today, I find it very important in our relationship with Krishna, and I want to do it through an example. And if there's anything you remember from this class, I hope it's this one example. So I have here a jar, and I have what's supposed to be marbles, but I didn't have marbles, so they're little flat plastic gems. And I want to share a story which I read, and it really struck me, and I want to relate it to our relationship with Krishna. There's a famous author and researcher, her name is Brené Brown, maybe some of you know who this is, and she's written a lot of books on the topic of trust and vulnerability. And she wrote a book, which I was reading on the plane just a few days ago, and in this book she talks about trust, and she gives a story with her third grade daughter that captures the essence of trust so much. And then when I read this, I really realized it captures such an important principle within bhakti as well. So she said one day her daughter Ellen came home from school and she closed the door and she was crying and she just slid down to the ground with her, you know, her face in her hands and sobbing away. And so her mom came and, you know, what's wrong, what's wrong? And she said, oh, something so embarrassing happened at school. And I told my friends and they promised to not tell. And when I got back to class, everybody was laughing at me. And everybody knew what happened. And it was just so embarrassing. Maybe you can relate. Something happened like that at class, it would be devastating. And she said it was so bad that the teacher took out the marble jar here, and she poured half the marbles out. I'm going to pour half the marbles out. What does this mean? So she said in her class, when the class collectively does something good, does something, a good deed, or does something that's a good decision, they add marbles to a jar. And when the class collectively does something that's a bad decision, they take marbles out of the jar. So she said it was so bad that the teacher poured half the marbles out of the jar because the class did something so bad and it was directed just at me. And so the mom was devastated to hear this. The girl was so sad. And she said, I'll never trust anyone ever again in my life. You know, it's just heartbreaking to hear that. And so her mom was thinking, what do I do? What do I say? You know, this is like, how do I console my daughter? And so she thought for a second, and she said, we trust people who have earned marbles over time in our life. And when someone supports you and is kind to you, they stick up to you, if they honor what you tell them, you know, they keep things confidential, then you add some marbles to the jar. And every time they do this again and again, you keep adding marbles. And you keep adding marbles until the jar is full. And that's a marble jar friend. That's a real friend. And those are the people you can trust, are the people that you can keep adding marbles to the jar. And the daughter thought for a second. And she goes, oh yeah, I have some marble jar friends. And so the mom said, oh yeah, who are your marble jar friends? She goes, oh, Hannah's my marble jar friend. Well, what did she do that you felt you can add marbles to the jar? And she said, well, last week in our soccer game, she said hello to grandma and grandpa, and she remembered their name, and that meant a lot to me. And then mom goes, well, then what? So that's it. She said, that was important to me because I have a huge family, and my friend remembered their names, and I didn't think she would remember their names because I have such a big family. And then she goes, oh, and also Laura's my marble jar friend. And she said, well, why is she your marble jar friend? She goes, well, at lunch she does the half butt sit with me. And she goes, well, what's the half butt sit? She goes, well, if I come late to lunch and there's no chairs available, then she scooches over a little bit and she puts half her butt in the chair and I put half my butt in the chair and I get to sit at lunch with my friends instead of sitting alone. And this means a lot to me. so I put marbles in the jar. And the mom thought for a second, and her first thought was, oh, okay, this works for kids, but not adults. But then she thought about it more, and in her life, she felt the same way with her friends. And those relationships where she felt she can really trust people, she realized it was built over small acts of kindness and trust and confidentiality over time. It wasn't necessarily big heroic moments. It's the layering and stacking of small meaningful moments of reciprocation over time. And when I read this, I put down the book immediately. And I thought, oh my God, this is applicable, yes, for all my friends and family, but this is applicable for my relationship with Krishna. This is so important. Because how much if I can't trust other human beings, do I really think I'm able to trust someone that I can't see with my own two eyes, that someone I can only feel their presence in my heart or feel through their devotees or through books, someone more subtle as the Supreme Lord in my life? If I feel like I can't trust people, then how do I feel I can trust the Supreme Lord? How full is my marble jar with Krishna? How full is my marble jar with Krishna? This is what I thought. And I thought, that's so important. And it's really the basis of a relationship with the Supreme Lord. And they say that faith, Srila Prabhupada would say, faith is unflinching trust in something sublime. That's what faith is. And faith is the basis of bhakti. Shraddha, it starts with faith. And it only progresses when the faith strengthens. And so faith is this unflinching trust. And so I thought why this is so important is because we have to look at our own relationship with Krishna if we want to develop it and see what moments have we perceived Krishna's hand in our life? What moments have we seen as the Supreme Lord has reciprocated with us? And we can add marbles to this jar. And this jar, is it full? Is it empty? You know, for example, I'll give a personal example. Often I think I pray for something from the Supreme Lord, or I pray for someone's health, or I pray for a good outcome of a decision. And after the decision happens, if it's a positive outcome, often I forget that I prayed for that, and I just move on with life. But if it's a negative outcome, I think, oh, Krishna, what are you doing? You didn't answer my prayers. Why is this wrong? Like last year, my father was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and we were so worried. Myself, the whole family, everyone who knew was praying so much. And really miraculously, in 1 year, his cancer has practically disappeared. It's amazing. And often I think about it, and I think how strong and courageous he is to go through that, and had such a strong mentality, which is very true. And how strong and how wonderful the doctors were, and the medicine they gave, and the care they gave, which is very true. But also those prayers were answered. But I forget that. And if I remember that, then I can say confidently, I can put a marble into my jar for Krishna. But if I forget that, if I don't count my blessings, if I don't have gratitude for the Lord and see what he's done in my life, how can I build trust? How can I build faith? How can I have any kind of taste or mellow or rasa within this relationship? And this is not just something that I'm taking from a self-help book and applying to bhakti. This is also in Shastra too. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came for two reasons. One reason was to taste prema ras, to taste the highest loving, devotional, mellow that's possible, what Srimati Radharani, she experiences in separation from Krishna. And the other reason was this taste that he's experiencing, he wanted to give the opportunity for the whole world to experience that as well. And Mahaprabhu, in his later decade of his life, he spent more isolated and alone to really go into this tasting of prema rasa. How did he do this? One way was that he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. What did he hear? This is primarily one of the main pastimes he heard was of Prahlad Maharaj. And you would think he's wanting to experience the highest Madhurya prema rasa. Why doesn't he just hear about the Rasa Leela part again and again and again? Why is he hearing and relishing so much Prahlad Maharaj's Leela? The answer is because Prahlad Maharaj's Leela demonstrates what? What does Prahlad Maharaj demonstrate? Any ideas? Yes. Devotion. What else? faith and trust in Krishna. One more. Trust, exactly. Prahlad Maharaj was tortured again and again and again, but he knew Krishna would protect him. He knew Krishna would protect him. And this is the basis for all rasa. This is the basis for all deep devotional service and intimacy in relationship with Krishna, is faith and trust. So this is something so important that we have to develop in our own life. And what I would like to leave you with in class today is something practical. It's just think from every now and then, maybe reflect in your life, how has Krishna's hand appeared in your life? Maybe it's through prayers which are answered. Maybe it's through devotees. Maybe it's through friends. Maybe it's through teachers. Maybe there's stuff that you feel, you know, maybe you feel like the marbles have to come out of the jar. Maybe you feel disappointed by Krishna in some ways. Battle with that. Understand that. Don't ignore it. This is all part of the relationship with Krishna and developing it. It's so important. So if there's anything to remember from today's class, please, the marble jar in relation to Krishna. And it's, of course, so important to think about this in relation to our other relationships and friends. And I'll just end with one point of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if I can find it. He describes this also in Sharanagati. He describes this as Vishram Bhatmika, confidence in the Lord's protection. It's, I think, the fourth part of his six-step Sharanagati. And he says that for the devotee to have confidence that the Lord will protect him, just like Prahlad Maharaj did, this faith and confidence in the Lord, this is essential in the path of surrendering and taking shelter to Krishna. So in summary, we spoke about Prahlad Maharaj's, sorry, not Prahlad Maharaj, Varahadev's fight with Hiranyaksha. And the deeper meaning of this is that it's to satiate this desire of fighting with the Lord and desire of assisting in this fight, in this battling spirit, in this rasa. And then from there, we spoke about rasa more, what the definition of rasa is, or this taste or flavor available in relation to the Lord. And from there, we zoomed in that the basis or foundation of this is understanding that we are a servant of Krishna eternally, and to really, really try to look our faith with Krishna and see moments that we can confidently say that I trust you, my Lord. And because of this circumstance, you've gained my trust, or I've gained your trust. And maybe certain circumstances that I feel the trust was broken, I will look into that more. And I will try to find out what the deeper meaning is there, because I'm committed to this relationship and I know that it's an eternal relationship. And therefore, I must look into it. Yeah? Okay, thank you so much. Hare Krishna. We have time for questions. I don't know if the students have time, but before you all go, if any of you have questions, I would be happy to address those first. Yeah. Okay. Jai, thank you. And if anybody else has questions, you're also most welcome to ask. I see there's a hand on this side. Okay, I can repeat the question in the mic.
It's actually a comment.
Sure.
That's okay.
Sure.
So you made the comparison of Prahlad Maharaj taking shelter of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So it's true that Krishna and his name is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
However, it was the name that he was calling
for the
thought.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
To reiterate the importance of
yeah. Yeah, 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 yes. Thank you. Thank you for the comment. The comment, just to repeat for everyone listening online, was that Prahlad Maharaj took shelter of Krishna, but the name and the personality are non-different. Krishna and his name are non-different. And Prahlada Maharaj took shelter of the name of the Lord. And in this way, we receive protection through the name. So this is our process. And Krishna is closest through his name, actually. He's closest through his name. I was just saying I was in Europe, and part of my trip was I was at a holy name retreat in Radhadesh with Satchinandan Swami, and he was giving one class. He gave a quote of Srila Prabhupada that says, as soon as we chant Krishna, it was from initiation lecture, I believe, and he said, as soon as we chant Krishna's name, Krishna appears on our tongue and begins to dance, and therefore we should chant very carefully, as Srila Prabhupada said. And, I mean, just imagine there's how accessible Krishna is through his name. Srila Prabhupada's not making this up. He appears on your tongue and begins to dance, so be very careful when you chant. He's so close in his name that he appears just by calling him. I mean, there's, of course, if you call him, you know, mechanically, then it's a little different, but this is the point he's making, how close Krishna is through his holy name. So thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you all, students, for coming. See you next time. Hare Krishna. Thank you. See ya. So we still have time. I'll just wait for the students to leave to see if we have any other questions or comments. Okay. Maybe not. Oh, one more. Yeah. Please. Sorry? Of backstory of Garuda and the wing. I don't know. I never actually heard the story. My guess is that it's from Garuda Puran. So there may be more details of the story available in Garuda Puran. Yeah, sorry, not this time. Yeah, I was reading it and thinking, where is the story from? This is so far out. My only guess was Garuda Puran, but it might take a little research to find it. Yeah, thank you, thank you. Okay, I guess we'll end there. Yeah? Hare Krishna, thank you. Granthirashimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.